Welcome to Why Am I Laughing? The podcast.
Hey everyone, and welcome to the podcast. My name is Ben Harrison. With me, as always, it's my co-host, RJ Sines.
I'm an oil man, and this is my son and partner, HW.
We're here at House Comedy Grooves to talk about what's funny, why it's funny. We answer that age-old question, where does Siri go when you're not talking to her?
In your pocket, duh.
If it is a her.
Ooh.
Like, where does, be her?
Where does... Okay, so Siri, you say... I'm not going to say it because she'll hear me say H-E-Y-S-I-R-I. But then she responds, and after she goes away, does she have a house, perhaps?
Yeah, in between the gigabytes and databytes.
Somewhere in there.
She have some nice real estate on Electric Avenue?
I'm thinking of the Rick and Morty episode from this last season. Where it's in season three where it's the automatron robots. They get robot Morty and robot Summer. And Morty starts to self-actualize, like become sentient. And he realizes...
In this season?
Haven't you seen episode two yet?
No, not yet.
Oh my gosh, you're so behind.
Oh no.
I feel feelings, and I want to run into override autocorrect. No.
Oh my gosh.
Hi, and just walks away. If Siri ever became like sentient, I think she'd just be so pissed. We're always yelling at her. That's the John Mulaney bit. Like, we yell at her. Like,
let's see if it works. Hey Siri. I broke mine.
Yeah, jeez.
All right, well, today we're going to be talking about the Sex on Ice comedy Blades of Glory.
Ooh.
2007 never looked so good.
Ooh, that smell. Can't you smell that smell? I think it's from one of the outtakes.
Okay, I was like, what? That's not a line from the movie.
It's a song, though.
Yeah. But before we get into that, RJ, what's our news blast?
All right, big update for those of you who are not up to date with the Emmy nominations. This is what you need to look for and watch before the Emmys go down. Louis C.K. 2017 and Sarah Silverman's special Speck of Dust both got nominated for Best Variety Special. Then they're both on Netflix, and we've talked about both of them on this podcast, and they're both good. Jeez, how many times can I say both? So go check them out. Kate McKinnon, Vanessa Bayer, and Leslie Jones, three leading ladies from Saturday Night Live, all nominated for Outstanding Supporting Comedic Actress. I think deservedly so. They've all been doing a great job this last year. Billy on the Street, another big friend? No, we're fans of them. We're fans of Billy on the Street. They're nominated for Outstanding Variety Sketch Series, which is great. It's his first nom. He won't stop talking about it on Twitter. It's very funny. Silicon Valley is now nominated for the fourth year in a row for Best Comedy Series. Will they win it this year? We don't know. They might. This was a pretty funny funny last season. I have no way of knowing where they can go next now that they don't have TJ Miller. We'll find out.
Who knows?
But the big Emmy news, Benjamin, is Alec Baldwin. He has appeared on SNL enough to be considered for Outstanding Supporting Actor in a Comedy Series.
No way.
Yeah.
For being Trump?
For being Trump on SNL.
That's awesome.
That's it.
That's amazing.
Which, I mean, like, he's done it a lot. He hosted once, which maybe that's what counts, is that he hosted it once. He hosted it, but also he was on, like, I feel like every week.
Yeah, oh yeah. Especially, yeah.
Man.
During his presidency.
Just when you think Alec Baldwin is done... He's back in the game, baby.
I didn't think he was done.
Oh, he was toast.
After yelling at that lady on the plane.
Shh, I don't talk about that.
All right. Is that the news?
That's our Emmy noms
what
and bombs.
What a blast. What were the bombs?
Oh, I guess there's no bombs.
All right. That's good. All noms, no bombs. That's what we like on this show.
Levity and depravity.
That's what we're all about. That t-shirt's being made currently. Like I said earlier, we're talking about Blades of Glory. Let me give you a little brief history on this movie. In 2006, John Heder was still riding off the success of his previous film, Napoleon Dynamite, covered by this podcast. Great film.
As we all know.
Multiple emails about the film.
Multiple emails about the pod.
About the pod and the film. He was set to star in an upcoming sports film with Ben Stiller. Stiller was hesitant after Dodgeball, another sports film he felt would be too redundant. Fortunately enough, Heater would eventually end up sharing the screen with the most unlikely of comedic counterparts, William Ferrell. While this film might have been overshadowed by Superbad, Knocked Up, and Hot Fuzz, Blades of Glory still holds its own even 10 years later.
To the day. Today is the 10th. No, I'm just kidding.
I was like, wow, what are the odds?
Incredible planning on our behalf.
Mm-hmm.
No, that I can't even believe that. I just remember watching it. I was like snowboarding or something. We went to like the theater, and then it was amazing. It was so...
Oh, when it came...
Yeah, it came out around my birthday in March, and we watched it. And that was just, wow. What a great movie. I'm so glad that we could talk about this, especially because it is such, you know, the more unknown, I would say, of the Will Ferrell sports.
It's unknown. I feel it's underappreciated, for sure.
And that's exactly why we're here, to talk about that.
To give it the appreciation that some of the dick jokes deserve.
I'll get inside your face.
All right, so that is our question. Why are we here? Why is it funny, RJ? Do you know the answer?
Yes, I do. The answer is...
Tell us in paragraph form.
Grublins. no, just kidding. Blades of Glory is the forgotten stepsister of Will Ferrell movies. While not nearly as popular as Anchorman or Talladega Nights, this film has a distinct character that others lack. Not like a character like Will Ferrell,
the film has
some vibrato.
Vibrato,
that's a word. With a cast that could not be more stacked, ridiculous overly sexualized ice skating scenarios, and more jokes per minute than the average film, this movie follows the comedic underdog story formula to perfection.
It's a great flick.
It's just a, like, with the formula, there's so many films that follow this, like, hey, I'm just a down on my luck athlete and I have a problem and now I got to overcome the odds and like win the thing at the end. Mm-hmm. Like there's so many, almost every film is like that in general, but especially these comedy, like triumph kind of underdog movies just do that. And, you know, there's the weird villain and there's like the problem with family and there's like the issues and the stupid stuff and... You know, it's so predictable, but this film, I really think, owns it.
Oh, absolutely.
Really grabs it by the reins.
Yeah. I think it may have been a little bit like what we're talking about. It's like this underdog or it's kind of forgotten. I feel it's a little bit of a product of its timing. So Will Ferrell goes Anchorman, like just knocks it out of the park. Then Talladega Nights. Oh my gosh, he can do sports movies. Then Blades of Glory comes along, and I feel like people are like, oh, is he just going to do sports movies over and over again?
Right.
I think I'm not into this, but it stands as its own thing. Little did they know, Jackie Moon was coming in Semi-Pro, is when the flop was going to hit the pancake. So I feel this one is still up there with those other two movies, Anchorman and Talladega.
What also interesting about how the flop hit the pancake was in 2007, mind you, Superbad and Knocked Up, okay, also two very popular movies that have come out of that year, very different in how we look at the formula for comedy movies, right?
Those movies are. Yeah.
This is the Judd Apatow kind of... and his cronies kind of films where they kind of remix up the formula. There isn't really a formula. Superbad follows kind of like just a basic weekend with friends and, you know, has kind of more genuine moments of things that the audience can relate to. Knocked Up deals with real life issues of having a pregnancy and what you do with that and adult life. But both very, very funny and so different than what audiences had seen in the past in Anchorman and Talladega and Dodgeball. These obviously, okay, we get the kind of film that we're going to see here. So I think it's interesting that this gets kind of pushed to the side because we are transitioning out of that.
Right. It was the last of its era.
I mean,
of its style.
Well, I don't know, because I feel like we still see films like this, certainly, right?
This
day and age. Well, not the sport, but like there's the comedy like icon who, like, in this universe has to... I mean, even Hot Rod follows that, right? I think Hot Rod is even the same year. No, it was 2010, 9. Oh, whatever.
I'll look it up.
But, you know, like, other movies like that, that this follow that similar formula. Even this last year, they redid Anchorman, right? 2 years
two,
ago.
Number yeah, two. Yeah, yeah
they
yeah.
read. They did Anchorman 2. That's
it's
that's,
not redoing it. It's a sequel. I was like, what?
I felt
they
like
redid
they redid
it.
I felt like they
yeah,
were trying
right?
to redo
oh,
it.
Bazinga.
I think that was a Freudian slip there.
Nice.
But for realsies, they
Hot Rod came out in 1950. Oh, that's the wrong movie. Sorry, wrong movie.
I just want to point out that you didn't even filter that. It went from your eyes straight out your mouth.
It also came out in 2007.
I think it was... Okay, whatever.
No, it is. I'm looking at it.
Yeah, you're right. Okay, I believe you.
You can't question the fact that I'm looking at the IMDb right now.
Anyways.
Same year as this movie.
Yeah, later on in the year.
Yeah, same year.
Same year. A lot of crazy stuff happened this year. 2007, 10 years ago.
Or 1950, I can't make it
1950, same year, if we're going to be honest with ourselves. That is not that movie.
That's so funny. Starring Jimmy Linden.
But you know what I mean? Like, so at this point in time, you get these films that are introduced that aren't like the typical comedy film. And now, I mean, we did an episode on Pineapple Express.
Right.
I think that's a great film that adequately shows how the postmodern comedy film looks.
Mm-hmm.
But Blades of Glory, that's just cut and dry, a simple formula, and
but still really good.
Absolutely. Still really I don't mean good. To knock it at all, but that's why it wasn't received the same way, mm-hmm. in my opinion.
So here's the basic premise, right? You have two male figure skaters, both at the top of their game, gunning for each other, trying to oust each other. They are rivals. They're both Americans. They hate each other. One of them is like, they're both the antithesis of each other. One of them's very innocent. One of them's very not. And then so they are in their career, they get in a fight.
Yeah.
And on the podium, apparently it's a big no-no.
They basically get disbarred.
Right, exactly. They get totally disowned from the sport. They can't do it anymore. They've been banned from men's figure skating.
So what's the solution?
There's got to be some loophole. Eventually
doubles.
They find it. They find it in doubles figure skating, which is a different thing. And they are going to compete together. And Coach is going to bring them together.
Craig T. Nelson.
Yeah, his coach. He's Will Ferrell's coach, right?
No, he was Jimmy McElroy's coach.
Oh, yeah, he's Jimmy McElroy's coach.
Yeah, because Will Ferrell never
he
had a coach.
So good.
So that's the whole thing. It's two figure skaters, and then they decide that...
Yeah, they hate each other, now they have to get along, and they're forced to, like, succeed together.
Yeah.
So good.
The ending is just magical. There's not a lot of better ways to end a movie than flying into the sky with Queen playing in the background.
Spoiler alert.
Well, sorry.
I'm just kidding. It's 2007.
Yeah.
So good. So, I mean, it's ripe for comedy, right? Just purely ripe for laughs.
Yeah, and I mean, we kind of talked about
pitting people that hate each other in the same room.
Yeah. We talked about the formula already. Like, this plot is so easy, but I think what works with this plot is they get it down to like a molecular level with each line, right? So they can jump right into it so quickly. If you remember the beginning of the film, they have like a whole exposition mm-hmm. on Chaz Michael Michaels and Jimmy McElroy, skater's yeah. little orphan awesome. Like, they quickly bring the audience into the skating world. And mind you, I'm not like up to date on like how the skating world works and the intricacies of all that stuff. So
really? I'm joking, man. Calm.
I know. I don't have time for your jokes, Ben. I'm trying to do a podcast.
Gotta keep
here.
Up on the jokes for a minute.
Yeah, exactly. So and I think they're able just to bring us into this universe so quickly that now they can have fun and now they can make jokes every 5 seconds without having to, like, because they did the work of bringing us to who the characters are. now in the second scene, they can make jokes like a million miles per hour without being like, oh yeah, that's right, you're my dad, and I'm an orphan, right, and I actually worked really hard to be this figure skater. And oh look, there's Chaz Michael Michaels.
It's really easy because, yeah, in the Olympics, like, they will do little background stories on the skaters that you're watching, so they just use that as all the exposition you'll ever need.
Which is perfect. I think more movies should do that.
Yeah, no.
Just to keep us up to date for, like, really important films like Baby Driver.
Absolutely. But so then, yeah, you get to know all these characters, and like we said, they're the antithesis of each other. Chaz Michael Michaels is, like, super troubled. He was a 9-year-old boy with a 40-year-old girlfriend. He, like, was big in the underground speed skating scene, yeah, in, like, sewers. And then eventually that became into ice skating.
And I love this character so much differently than I love all the other Will Ferrell characters. Because, mm-hmm, granted, we've already said, it's not as iconic. Chaz Michael Michaels, who, in a way? But the if you look, honestly, at every single thing that comes out of Chaz's mouth is a joke.
Yeah.
Everything.
Absolutely.
To a point where it gets annoying. Like, you know, the person's like, oh gosh, shut up, you're always making jokes, you and me. It's like, can't you just take this moment seriously?
I was like, I don't know any people like that. Oh, that's wait. Because I'm that person.
Because I never duck myself in the mirror. Oh wait, I do. But seriously, like, it gets to the point where I'm rewatching this. I haven't seen it in a few years. Like, oh my gosh, like, every single line they're giving this guy just ammunition. Like, I'll get inside your face. Like, things he doesn't even need to retort to. He's making stupid jokes. And, of course,
that's mind-boggling. Did you just say mind-boggling? Yeah, like when something's so crazy it puts your mind in a bottle.
What? Everything. Every single, like, there isn't a second that they waste on Chaz Michael Michaels. And I think that sets him apart from other characters. Because even look at, you know, Talladega or Anchorman, arguably two of the best films that he's done for comedy.
And Talladega, too, is very similar, right? The guy's at the top of his game, exactly, that comes down.
Exactly. Almost exactly the same. The character, in and of itself, is funny. There are moments where the character is not always the comic relief. Mm-hmm. Does that make sense?
Yeah, yeah.
Will Ferrell's character will rely on other characters to say that joke. There is no moment throughout this film where Chaz Michael Michaels isn't the one who's always delivering the punchline, always carrying the scene with some stupid joke or physical comedy too. I mean, good grief, the guy's amazing. Let's just talk about the physical chemistry between John Heder and Will Ferrell.
Right? Yeah, I know. Hey,
beefy teen mixed with skinny beefy boy teen. Wonder.
Yeah, I mean, they're easily like a contrast in every single way.
Yeah.
Physically.
And characters are definitely opposites as absolutely. Well.
I love Jimmy McElroy is just like, he was an orphan, but he was plucked out by this guy who's just wanted to make him the best. William so that's Fickner. All he's ever known. He's really never had a childhood, right? So he's just a grown kid.
Oh yeah. Other interesting thing, just a little side intrigue for all you.
Mm-hmm.
The link between Step Brothers and Blades of Glory is the song Por Ti Volare, the one that he sings, the one that Will Ferrell sings at the end of the... Yeah. That's playing in the intro for Jimmy McElroy as he's ice skating.
The only difference is in Blades of Glory, it's in English. And in Step Brothers, it's in Italian.
Vice V, right?
No.
Oh, okay. I believe you. I don't remember. You're so right. It is, yeah, because I'm like, he says Por Ti Volare, that's Italian.
Yeah.
Classic.
Boats and hoes.
Yeah. That's another song that's also in that guy. No, Jimmy McElroy is such a great character, and especially we're coming off the coattails of Napoleon Dynamite. Mm-hmm. Boring, dry, whatever. He's not as dry, and he's definitely more charismatic. He's almost like a little fancy boy.
Yeah, absolutely.
I'm thinking of the Unbreakable Kimmy Schmidt.
there
we go. Can't edit that out. That is too good for comedy. Oh my gosh. The Unbreakable Kimmy Schmidt reference A daddy's boy.
Yeah. He's such a daddy's boy.
A daddy's boy. Gosh dang, I'm never going to live
that
down.
That's so funny.
That's actually, I'm going to make a Twitter account for that. Anyways, so he's got this daddy's boy mentality, and he thinks he deserves this and that.
But then he gets totally abandoned.
He gets completely disowned. So like legally, I'm disowning him.
Yeah. So he's very lost.
Right.
And that's where Coach comes in and kind of saves both of them, because both of them are spiraling. Jimmy doesn't know how to let go of skating. He's working at like a skating shop, and he knows like he's tightening this girl's skates. It's like way too tight.
Yeah.
She's like, no, this is the best. Like, pain is a part of the process. Like he was just abused in that way. So that's all he knows. And then Chaz is at the Grublins. And he's, he's like the evil witch. He's got to go out there and
drunk the whole time.
Ice skate. But he's very intoxicated.
Watching him puke was the funniest thing ever on ice in a giant wizard costume.
Yeah. He has this giant wizard helmet, and then he has like a microphone inside so they can hear everything he's saying. And he's just like so lewd and inappropriate, and it's a kid's thing, right?
Yeah.
It's so funny.
Just drunken ramblings. That's so perfect.
This is real life.
So and the funny thing how the coach, Craig T. Nelson, mm-hmm. decides to bring these two together is while they're fighting.
Right.
And it's very similar to how Edgar Wright shows and doesn't tell kind of connections, where it's he's on one side of the TV, he's looking at live footage from the news of Jimmy McElroy and Chaz Michael Michaels fighting, and they're doing like perfect like ice doubles figure skating maneuvers while fighting. And he's like looking at the other TV.
He like wants to pick him up over his head to drop him, and then it's like this perfect little plie and then drops him, and he's like, oh no, it can't be. And then he looks over on the other side, and he's looking at the TV, and then like Jimmy's running at Chaz, and Chaz throws him, but it's like this like perfect
dive jump kind of.
And then he goes right into like some trash.
Yeah.
And then it's like, that's so genius. You're so right. Show not tell.
It's really perfect visual storytelling. How they all come together, and that really is a lot of how we see them work comedically.
Mm-hmm.
Off the ice, it's witty banter.
Right.
Always joking. Always dialogue. You smell like after shaving taco meat. and on the ice, I don't even think they say very many words at all.
On the ice?
Yeah.
What do you mean?
Like to each other when they're skating. Like very, there's not dialogue.
In the performance, yeah, no, but like there's little bits like.
But that's.
Capture the dream.
Well, I mean like before they perform or like after they perform. But I'm talking about like during their routine, their comedy just comes from like how ridiculous they look.
It's either visual or like physical.
And their costumes. The costumes that they have to wear are just fire and ice. That one's so stupid. I love it.
It is. And it's like it's very good at making fun of ice skating without like being mean or degrading it. It's,
yeah.
It's funny because it's two guys, and that would almost never happen in real Olympic ice skating. But they're just like doing the weirdest things, like when they skate really fast at each other, and then they open their legs and they like come to each other and like
they're just high five each other's junk, just goosh. And they're like, ugh. I can just picture like the cut to Will Ferrell's face. It's just like just shaking in that little instant of pain.
That's so good.
The only thing that even adds to their comedic presence in this film is the support from Strons and Fairchild Van Waldenberg, Will Arnett, and Amy Poehler, which is just an incredible like secondary duo who's like, they've won everything in doubles figure skating.
Right.
And now they have these.
Now they're being threatened by the other Americans who, like, they were able to be like, oh, they're just like doofuses in singles. But now they're in their league and they're, like, threatened.
Yeah.
So good.
And some of the, I mean, talking about jokes for a minute, again, the jokes that come out of these two are unbelievable.
Yeah.
To this day, I still say, when they doing the interview, like talking about dreams and Will Ferrell, and they're like, I think it's Amy Poehler goes, "Dreams never weigh you down," and Will Arnett's response is, "No, dreams are in your sleep." So anytime
we may be wearing the gold, but it feels light as air because dreams never weigh you down. Dreams are in your sleep. So good.
Yeah, and that's anytime I hear anyone talk about dreams, it's like, oh, no, I get it. Because dreams are in your sleep. It's not really here.
So good.
But the way they're able to set up the stupid, like, routines, like, not only did we embarrass Marky Mark, but we let down the entire Funky Bunch. And then they do the JFK Marilyn Monroe routine.
So weird.
Oh, it's so crazy. The thing that adds to them so much more is their, like, bizarre sexual chemistry.
Right, yeah.
Which, if I'm not mistaken, I think they were married
they
at
were,
the time.
They were, yeah.
And so that's a very real connection that they have on camera. And it's so creepy because they're brother and sister.
Right.
But at the same time, like, even more hilarious because they're like fawning over each other the whole time and no one seems to question it at all.
Yeah, it's really weird.
Probably one of the best scenes where we see all these characters interact at the same time is the phone call between Jimmy McElroy and Katie Van Waldenburg, mm-hmm. played by Jenna Fischer, who isn't really funny at all in this movie, but I don't know.
Well, you go. I mean, she's not, her character isn't trying to be funny.
No, I know. She plays the part.
Very innocent.
Yeah, I'm just saying the character in general. And yeah. Jenna Fischer did a great job.
It's, keep going.
So that scene where on one end, I'm having deja vu. Have we talked about this before here?
Could have.
So on one end, you have Jimmy McElroy with Chaz Michael Michaels in his ear, basically telling him what to say. And on the other end of the line, it's Jenna Fischer talking to Jimmy McElroy with Strons and Fairchild in her ear.
Mm-hmm.
And they're feeding each other lines for how to go on a first date. So really, it's Chaz Michael Michaels trying to get on a first date with Strons and Fairchild.
And both of those people are just horrible,
they're
nasty
terrible,
people.
Terrible, nasty, sexual people.
Where Jimmy and Katie are very innocent.
Which, did we mention the fact that Chaz Michael Michaels is a sex addict?
It's my cross to bear.
Probably one of the best scenes displaying that is the sex or Addicts Anonymous.
Yeah, Sex Addicts Anonymous.
And he's like, I was in a hotel room. It was 112 degrees. There was a monkey who could operate a video camera. And I had 2 bottles of canola oil. And everyone's like getting like really hot and bothered.
Yeah.
Like, in the meeting.
Oh, yeah, Luke Wilson's in this movie.
That's right.
He's like the sex therapist.
Wow.
He's like, should we talk about gonorrhea or chlamydia? And everyone's like, so good.
Yeah. And so, anyways, Strons and Fairchild, great supporting actors and actresses. The fact that you have both of them on screen being such dynamic yet like not overpowering to the main characters, really speaks.
Their character arc is that their parents died they were driving to pick Katie up from her practice or something,
sure,
and Katie survived, the parents didn't. So the brother and sister, their grief tactic is not to like actually grieve their parents, but to just blame it on their little sister and gang up against her. So they feel like very connected and close, where Katie is like totally separated,
right,
and they hate her, but they use her to like do their bidding because they cheat. They just cheat in everything. So then they have her go film the Chaz and Jimmy's practices.
They even try to cheat with she throws a marble down. A part of her necklace. Oh, even before the finals, they try to like kidnap Chaz. Yes. And they have them all tied up. And then there's this amazing ice skating sequence with Will Ferrell and Will Arnett. And probably one of the best parts is you have this amazing like ice skating chase scene to like walking on land, like on ice skates. Going up in an escalator, and you're stuck and you're like 10 feet away.
He looks back, he's like, what are you?
Some pretty good skating back there, actually. I didn't know you could do that.
I didn't know I could do that either.
No, he's like, he's looking at his costume, he's like, so what are you supposed to be? He's like, I'm JFK. It'll make sense later.
That's so true. The reason I think I've probably messed up half the lines already is because I'm so fluent in the line-o-rama of this movie.
Oh, really?
Which is like their blooper reel.
Yeah,
but
yeah,
it's
yeah.
not blooper reel. It's just alternate takes of these shots.
The lines, yeah.
So there's like one of them going up the escalator like, hey. So escalators, right? Pretty crazy. Like they're
no
just
way.
Like, they're That's just so improv
yeah.
the whole thing,
Total
basically.
Small talk.
But anyways, that whole sequence is one of my favorites and showcases, again, how you can now switch up all the characters and there's still an interesting dynamic between Will Arnett, Will Ferrell. They're both like raspy voiced hotheads.
So good.
Easily both could voice Lego Batman. Which, by the way, very good movie.
Yeah. I haven't seen it.
Man, you gotta watch that.
But I did see the Lego movie. And Lord Business is pretty good.
That's right. He's
Will Ferrell.
They're both in Lego movies. Spoiler yep. alert.
And then he gets his own Lego movie.
Yeah.
Lego Batman.
Honorable mention for characters, I would say, goes to Nick Swartzen's character, Hector, who has like the best little like inserts into the whole movie.
Yeah.
I think he's the one who figures out that they could do doubles, right?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. He brings it to Jimmy.
Yeah. You guys could do doubles.
That's so funny.
Hector, like, you know I have a restraining order against you,
yeah,
right?
He's like, if I'm good at anything, it's obsessing. And then he like has a piece of his hair or something. So weird.
Yeah, and again, this could be from the alternate takes or it could be from the actual movie. He goes, yeah, I just really want to like cut off your skin and like wear it to my birthday party. I want to eat your hair. I want to be you, Jimmy.
So weird.
He's so creepy. And the fact that it's like another 30-year-old man obsessing over like a probably older 20-year-old ice skater
yeah.
man. Just really stupid to see that, but
I think my honorable mention would have to go to Andy Richter.
Oh, yes.
He's like the Canadian police.
The Canadian police.
It's so weird. All of a sudden it's like, what?
Andy you're
Richter,
in this.
You're here.
Yeah, also double honorable mention, Mr. Feeney. He's the commissioner of the ice
yeah.
skating.
I don't know his real name. Knight Rider.
He's
Kit.
Yes. He's really good at saying, you have been stripped of your medals and banned from figure skating.
So good.
I would want that for a ringtone.
I love that. I love when they come back too and they're like, these two, I thought I banned you from here. You get out of here. He's like, I'm not signing up Jimmy McElroy or Chaz Michael Michaels. I'm signing up the Pairs team of Jimmy McElroy and Chaz Michael Michaels.
Everyone turns, starts taking pictures.
So good.
I want to talk about how, as this film...
Say you want to get a snow bone. Sorry, I'm just remembering the phone call, how many good lines there are.
It's
been working on my squat thrusts. So good. Sorry, go with what you were saying.
I already like I've gotten a point in this podcast as a recording where I think of a funny scene and I'm like, oh wait, no, I don't want to talk about that one. Oh wait, I don't want to talk about that one. Oh, there's just so much to
yeah,
pull from.
A billion.
But putting it in generally, the style of this comedy does an incredible job of just being so committed to this world
mm-hmm.
and this universe and these characters. And making jokes about it. I mean, there's a whole anecdote about Will Ferrell talking about his tattoos.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there's a whole other sequence where he's on the phone
yeah.
trying to talk to Jimmy McElroy's voicemail because he has a problem and he touched Jenna Fisher's boobs and he feels bad about it.
That's
for about
the
a
best
month.
When he
my urine smelled like marshmallows. And he's just spouting
yeah,
off like
he's just so guilty.
Drunken lullabies.
You're so right.
So I don't know. I feel like they've done a really good job just accessing this world,
yeah.
making it their
it's
own.
It's just enough a heightened sense of reality. It's very based in real things, but it's just enough to where like you can fly off at the
yeah,
end.
Yeah, yeah.
Or you can watch the North Koreans cut like a head off
yeah.
when they're watching like
the Iron Lotus.
Like it's just enough believable. Like they put that in. They put other little things. Where it's like, but then that makes it believable for enough for them to fly away at the end.
And talk about an amazing...
They fly away into the clouds.
Yeah.
That's not an ending to a movie. That's just nothing.
They didn't know how to end it.
It was so good.
Which isn't bad.
Yeah, no, it's perfect.
talk about an amazing comedic timing and setup for the Iron Lotus joke, right? So all along, the fabled Iron Lotus, you see the footage of the heads getting chopped off, which is amazingly funny to watch that footage. She's like, oh my gosh, that's crazy.
Because they land it, and then all of a sudden she drops to her knees and the head rolls off.
So that's been built up the whole time. Uh-huh. And then finally, they decide to do the Iron Lotus after you've seen like a montage of failed attempts. Yeah. And then they have to switch reverse. Because of the bead that hurt Chaz's foot. He's like, yeah. I can't go off this foot. We got to do the Iron Lotus in reverse. Are you serious? And then even Craig T. Nelson, like, yeah. as they're doing
No, I was wrong.
I was wrong all along. Just stop right now.
Suicide. Oh, so good.
Such a good moment. And like opera orchestra in the back, like,
it comes to such a good finale,
and they get that like amazing slow-mo shot of the skate barely trimming his chin hairs.
It's a really good use of music in this movie.
Yo, yeah,
it's kind of a little like it sneaks by. I don't think that's something I immediately think of, but they use a lot of really good songs.
Well, especially for the routines.
Yeah, exactly. That's
the
what I'm
routines
saying.
Are...
That's why it sneaks by.
I don't think they would ever use those songs in actual ice skating, which
no
makes
way.
It so much better because it makes it so much more like roller derby-esque kind of music.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Like The Stroke in the beginning. But yeah, use of Flash.
So good.
For Queen at the very end.
Yeah,
so good. Wow.
So good. We have anything more on this movie? It's done really well.
It's done well, and if you, by chance, you haven't seen it, it's probably worth the watch.
Absolutely.
It still holds up, 2017, and again, I mean, we had just talked about in our Seinfeld episode on Jerry Seinfeld about how it's accessible in so many different points in time. I think this really is a movie that could be accessed anywhere. I mean, even if you watched it and you were in the 1960s or the 1950s, like you'd be a little confused
back in time
how well the production value is. But at the same time, like you buy into this world. Oh, yeah. It's this universe where they celebrate figure skaters and there's hotheads.
It's
and
not the highest brow of comedy, but it's funny.
Yeah.
You're laughing.
It's mid-brow.
Yeah.
I mean, there's certainly like really intellectual parts about it, but not.
But it doesn't take itself too seriously.
No,
the
it's
guy's
for
a sex addict.
It's for teenagers. Yeah, it's
so good.
It's if you want a little goofball underdog funny time, look no further, America.
Well, RJ, you know what happens next, right?
I think it's time for a segment.
Got him.
I was hoping you'd cut me off before, you did it.
It's time for Ben's Wacky Facts. This is the part of the show where I say some wacky facts, and RJ rates them on wacky tomatoes. Are you ready, RJ?
I'm born ready.
Here's wacky fact numero uno. John Heater spent 2 years in Japan as a Mormon missionary. He learned to speak fluent Japanese, and he showcased this talent in the part of the movie where he responds flawlessly to the reporter's question posed in Japanese.
No, that's in the other room. That's the best.
Yeah.
Because this woman raises her hand and she says something in Japanese, and Will Ferrell's response is, "No, that's in the other room." And then Jimmy McElroy responds in fluent Japanese, which is perfect. Perfect comedy.
So good.
Wow. Survey says you get a solid 85% for that wacky fact. 85.
That's worth it.
Very good.
Very wacky. Here's wacky fact number two. The writers claimed that 88.773% of Will Ferrell's dialogue is completely improvised or changed in some way to suit his persona.
100%.
Right?
That is the most believable thing I've ever
Absolutely.
Heard.
Absolutely.
And, I mean, like I said, look on the back of the DVD. There's the additional takes. It's just hit after hit of Will Ferrell saying, like, we're going to skate to one song
Do
only.
Do you have the DVD?
Oh, yeah. Are you really? Kidding me?
It's I don't like have a DVD player.
One of I have a laptop, don't I?
Barely.
Ever heard of a disc drive? Woo! We're going to skate to one song only. Ooh, that smell. Can't you smell
that's
that?
That's what it's from?
Yeah, that's what funny. He says. It's all in there somewhere. But
Lady Humps by the Black Eyed Peas. Throw me some chicken! I love that he calls it Lady Humps.
Yeah.
The song's called My Humps. But he calls it Lady Humps. It makes it so much weirder.
He doesn't want to confuse Jimmy.
All right, what percentage we got?
That gets a 65 on the wacky.
65.
Still wacky, but I think no one was surprised.
Everyone
by
saw
that.
It coming.
Yeah.
That makes sense. Still wacky. Here's wacky fact number 3. Making an appearance as Melissa Kelly. She has, her character even has a name and a last name. Melissa Kelly, an HBO 2 reporter in this movie, is Flo from the Progressive Insurance commercials.
What?
Sorry, guys. I had to put this one in there because I knew it would
this
just
movie
chop our
just
days,
went down but... a whole peg.
I can't picture it, but that's a fact.
The only thing I can picture now is how Progressive commercials have chipped away at everything that's good in comedy.
Oh my gosh.
By putting out these terrible, terrible commercials.
You're okay, RJ.
No, I'm triggered.
Isn't that ridiculous?
That is pretty crazy. That is very wacky. And the critics, you know, the results
hey, the
show.
The results are in.
That's a solid 98% wacky. Very good. But again, most of the critics are complaining.
They're
because
disappointed.
No one likes Flo. You know, that's just the stats.
That sounds
this
like...
is probably the only kind of rating that Flo will get that's above a 1%.
Is the surprise factor.
Yeah. That's crazy. I had no idea that she was in Blades of Glory.
No one did.
Until now. You're welcome, America. That's stuff that the liberal media won't tell ya.
Well, that's it for the last of the wacky facts, so that means it's time for hashtag Whale Mail of the Week.
Of course. This week's Whale Mail reads, Ben, what was the story you almost told on the Mean Girls episode about Halloween? You started talking about it, but then said never mind. Did you kill a guy? Mark. Mark's got some good questions. I'd like to follow up with a, if you did kill a guy, where would you put the body?
A, no. And B, ocean?
Just like Dexter.
Yep.
Pretty smart, except...
Follow suit.
Dexter, pretty dumb. After a while... The bags decompose.
Yeah. We've all
seen
it.
And all the body parts
go
to the top.
No.
Oh, the rocks decompose or the rope decomposes? I thought it was the bags decompose and all the body parts float
just
to the top.
Just one bag does. There's one bag that he like does in haste. And then a scuba diver finds like one piece of body parts. And then they go down and they find all of the bodies. All
right. Next week on Why Am I Laughing? The case of Dexter's
Season 2
floating
of
body
Dexter.
Parts.
Okay. The question is, what was my Halloween story? Got
yeah,
it.
Yeah, what is that?
I did a quick little edit and I just didn't share it because it's not important, but I'll share it now. We were talking about Regina George's Halloween costume, right? An excuse for girls to just dress up in a very inappropriate manner.
Okay.
And so I had a story where I dressed up in an inappropriate manner where all I had on was a gown.
Lingerie. Oh.
Was a gown, and I had my little butt hanging out of the back of the gown, and on the front it said mental patient. That's all the story is.
Oh, that's not that bad. I mean, that's like...
I made an edit because I didn't know if saying mental patient was okay.
That's, I mean, I think in retrospect, presenting the story with that wisdom now, that it's not a funny thing to do. I mean, certainly there is a joke there.
Yeah.
It's just, you know, not as...
Joke's on me.
Yeah, joke's on you. You are a mental patient for thinking that's funny. No, I mean, good on you, man. I mean, that's pretty messed up, but also you learn from your mistakes.
Hey, I got laughs at that Halloween party, so I'm good.
Yeah.
And it was really easy to dance.
Sixth grade was a great year for you, huh?
I think so. Or eighth grade, probably.
Mark, thank you for the email.
Yeah.
Honestly, keeping us on our game. If you guys have questions that we didn't answer on that episode, like maybe Ben did have a murder and maybe it is somewhere deep in the recesses of the Pacific Ocean.
That's a whale-spiracy for another day.
Levity and depravity.
Well, RJ, if someone's looking for us, where would they find us?
You can always find our podcast on the iTunes podcast app, Google Play, TuneIn Radio, or Stitcher. Also, check out our Patreon page. There's a link in our description. There's a lot of great content there that you can get, you guys. We have our warm-ups. You can get the podcast a day early. You can get our monthly trinket of comedy, which is also a very interesting thing that you might not have gotten in the past. Having said that, we're also part of the Pod Tyrant Network. Go to podtyrant.com or geektyrant.com. Lots of great podcasts about movies, TV shows, and popular culture. And again, be sure to check out our Twitter page at WhalePod, our Facebook page, Why Am I Laughing? And don't forget to email us at whyamilaughingpod@gmail.com.
You put some funny stuff on the WhalePod Twitter. It's good.
We're tweeting every day.
Yeah, if you're thinking about following it, go ahead and follow it.
Our GIFs are off the charts, people. No other podcast has the GIF to comedy ratio.
Everyone knows you have the best GIFs. Everyone knows that about you.
RJ Signs, GIFstinary. Anyways, so send us an email. We read everything, anything, questions, comments, murder concerns, hate mail.
All the good stuff.
You know that stuff.
If you're looking to find RJ on the Twitterverse, you follow him at Rodolfo the Brown.
And you can find Ben at Unbreakable Kimmy Shit.
I really should get that one. We have to thank Ben Sound for our theme music and Wolfpack for our outro music. Thank you again for listening. We'll catch you next week with a little Conan O'Brien.
Absolutely.
Ever heard of him?
I don't know. Have I?
Yes, you have. Hopefully, because we're going to do an episode on him.
Oh, right.
We're going to leave you with what we always leave you, and that is comedy is all about
bags and bodies.
The Incredible Hulk. Sorry. It's right behind you.